Good morning. Good morning, hockey fans. Good morning, USA fans. I'm Scott McLaughlin here with John Lyons. John, we got a pretty big game going on this morning.
Yeah. A little bit of a big game, Scott. About, what, 10 minutes from now?
Yeah, a little unusual for this time slot. I've been doing Sunday mornings in different forms for a while, and we don't usually get live games to react to in the 8 to 10 a.m. time slot. So USA-Canada for Olympic gold today. Simply put, one of the biggest games in the history of American hockey.
Yeah, and you go back to the Four Nations last year where it was an overtime game, Canada wins, and it felt like at that point the USA-Canada rivalry had really hit a new level. And I know they had the gold medal game in 2010 with the overtime goal by Crosby, but there was an edge to that Four Nations tournament last year, including not just the game with the fights, but that gold medal, or I should say that final game as well. And then you carry it over to this Olympics where both teams, they didn't just coast to this, right? They both had tough quarterfinal games. Canada then had a tough semifinal game as well. But you kind of felt all along that this was the matchup, not just everyone wanted to see, but it was almost destined to happen. And I agree with you. One of the biggest games in USA hockey history, one of the biggest Olympic games in Team USA history, I think, of any kind.
Yeah, and I think it can be, if the U.S. wins, a real crowning moment and like a vindication of how far they've come, because it's interesting. Today is 46 years to the day of the Miracle on Ice, which was obviously USA's upset of the Soviet Union. A couple days later, they beat Finland to win gold. As it turns out, for the last time, you know, through today in the Olympics, this is not that. This U.S. team is not an underdog against Canada. It's not even 2010, where the U.S. was still, you know, not a huge underdog, but a clear underdog against that Canadian team then. 2014 semifinals, U.S. also lost to Canada over in Sochi, and again, were pretty clear underdogs. That's just not the case anymore. These are two teams on equal footing. You saw that in Four Nations. Those were two very even games, the preliminary game against Canada and that final, really both decided by one mistake. That first game up in Montreal, what turns out to be the winning goal for the U.S., comes on a bad line change by Canada. That's it. That's all it took, and then they add an empty netter. The final here in Boston goes to overtime, is even in terms of scoring chances, shots, all of it, all the way through, and comes down to a missed defensive zone coverage where Austin Matthews and Adam Fox both go for Mitch Marner and leave Connor McDavid, the best player in the world, wide open in the slot. Like, that's it. That's all that separated these two teams, was one mistake in both of those games. And I think you're going to see something similar here today, because both teams have gotten better since last year. Although Canada, we'll note right up front, will be without Sidney Crosby today. He is not dressing for this gold medal game. Got injured in the quarterfinals against the Czechs. Missed the semis. Seemed like there was a chance he was going to go. He's been on the ice, tried to push through it, but unable to go for this game. Canada does have Macklin Celebrini, who they did not have last year. 19-year-old phenom for the Sharks out of Boston University. Shout out Terriers. But leads this tournament in goals as a 19-year-old, playing on a line with Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon, which is simply just one of the best, most talented lines ever assembled in the history of hockey. And finding a way to slow that down is going to be massive for this U.S. team, who has also gotten better from that final last year. The U.S. did not have Quinn Hughes for that entire Four Nations tournament. He's been the U.S.'s best player in the Olympics. The U.S. did not have Charlie McAvoy for that final. He had been knocked out of the tournament already. McAvoy is second on this USA team in ice time in the Olympics. He's been a huge part of what they're doing, especially defensively. Been a physical tone setter. He's had several big hits. And the U.S. has a healthy Matthew Tkachuk, which they did not have for that final last year. Tkachuk was banged up going into it, dressed, played some shifts, but ultimately I think he ended up under 5 minutes of ice time. And that final game was clearly way below 100%. So this is like, it's take that Four Nations final and turn it up another notch, because I legitimately think both of these teams have gotten better in the last year.
And I would agree with you, and I would also add, not just is Celebrini there for Canada, not just is McAvoy and Tkachuk healthy for the U.S., but last year, Four Nations, those teams were kind of thrown together and you were like, all right, hey, let's see how this works out, play together. Now, a lot of these guys played together last year at Four Nations. They had a ramp up to the Olympics. They played multiple Olympic games together. So they're coming in just playing at a higher level than I think what we saw. And what we saw in the Four Nations was great hockey. And your point on McAvoy, I think the best hockey Charlie McAvoy has played was in that Four Nations tour. I think he played better in that than at any time that he has for the Bruins. And I think you take, again, Celebrini, a healthy McAvoy, healthy Tkachuk, these teams have been together. I think you're going to see a great game today, and I agree with you. I think both teams today are better than they were a year ago in Four Nations. I think they're better than they were 2.5, 3 weeks ago. Like, you look at what Canada had to do late in that game to beat Finland, or what the U.S. and Canada both had to do in the quarterfinal to win in overtime. Like, those are the types of things that I think take time playing together, right? And it's just been really cool to see this U.S. team, to your point, really grow together. And Bill Guerin talked about, I'm not just putting the best collection of talent together, I'm putting together the best team. And up to this point, that has really paid off.
Yeah, and going in, you know, I was among those who was critical of some of the roster decisions, taking like both Vincent Trocheck and JT Miller, who are kind of fourth line, more grinder types, penalty kill guys, and leaving both Jason Robertson and Cole Caulfield at home, who are two of the top five or six goal scorers in the NHL, not just among Americans, just period. Yeah. Like, that's a lot of talent to leave home. But I will say the U.S. penalty kill has been perfect in this tournament, and Miller and Trocheck are like the first two forwards over the boards on the penalty kill. It's made a difference, and they're out there for defensive zone draws. Trocheck's won like 65% of his faceoffs in this tournament, so you got to give some credit where it's due. Now, this is the ultimate test, right? Like, none of it matters if you go out today and lose 4-1 to Canada. Then every second guess is on the table. But to this point, yeah, it looks like there were some pretty good choices. You know, Kyle Connor has been reduced to healthy scratch territory. That's been a disappointment, but they've got guys playing well. They have three lines now that have really four, including the fourth line, that have some real chemistry, which I think is more than you can say for Canada, which has, in a way, weirdly, kind of become a one-line team, where that one line, as I said, is one of the best in the history of hockey, but they've kind of struggled to find like other combinations that are going to work, especially now with Crosby out. One that they found is a line to watch today, and that is the line of Brad Marchand, Sam Bennett, and Tom Wilson, which are just the three agitators, rats, whatever you want to call them. Some people just call them dirty, maybe. I've seen some people call that the fine line because of how much all three of them have paid in fines over the course of their careers.
Marchand and Bennett, too, with experience playing together in Florida, I think that helps. And I want to ask you this question because this is something just me watching the tournament. Early on, Canada is blowing teams out. I'm like, oh, McDavid, celebrate. Then, you know, they trail to the Czech Republic in that game 2-1. They end up winning in overtime. They win a close game against Finland 3-2. I kind of walked away from that saying, okay, like, these guys are obviously elite. They're great. They seem more beatable than they've been in the past. And is that just, is the Czech Republic and Finland better than I'm giving them credit for? Or kind of to what you were saying about the one line thing, is this Canada team more beatable than, say, when the U.S. played them in 2010 or 2014 or previous times?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think those Czech and Finland teams were probably a little better than people are giving them credit for, and got better as this tournament went on, because early on, both of those teams struggled. The Czechs got blown out by Canada in the first game of group play. Finland got upset by Slovakia in their first game of group play. So right away, you're like, oh, those two teams are disappointing. Well, no, then they got better as the tournament went on. And remember, like, especially in the case of the Czechs, they weren't at Four Nations last year. So they didn't have that tournament a year ago to build chemistry. So, yeah, so both those teams did get better. But yes, this Canada team is not invincible. Clearly not invincible. Like, that. Yeah, they are largely dependent on three forwards. Their defense outside of Cale Makar is probably not the most mobile. You know, it's not a lot of guys jumping up, getting involved in the play. And you know, the big question mark here on both sides is the goaltending, right? Where, like, Jordan Binnington is having a terrible season in the NHL, but always seems to step up on these big stages. Yeah. Connor Hellebuck is the three-time Vezina winner, won the Hart Trophy's League MVP last year, has been great in these Olympics, and yet there are the big game questions about him.
Horrible in the playoffs last year.
Horrible in the playoffs, yeah. Has struggled in the playoffs before. Was okay, not great in the Four Nations final. Got outplayed by Binnington. Straight up, got outplayed. So the U.S. should have the advantage there, but anything can happen in one game, so we'll see if they actually do.
Yeah, and the Binnington thing's interesting to me because when you watch him on a consistent basis, you're like, okay, this guy's like not that good. But then you think, hey, this is a guy that won Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final on the road and played, I thought, shaky early in that game, then settled in and played really well. We saw him win the Four Nations last year. We've seen him, again, I just talked about the two close games Canada has had so far in the quarterfinal and the semifinal. Like, you almost have to think he's going to play well today. It's just he's got one of those weird trajectories where I don't even know if you want him for an 82-game season, but for a playoffs or for an Olympics, you kind of do want it. Like, it's a weird, like, again, I agree with you. Like, Hellebuck, you should have the check mark there, but Binnington finds a way to almost always play well or well enough to win in these big moments.
He's a battler. Like, he can rise to the occasion. He is one of those guys who can just get jacked up and kind of find another level. So puck just dropped. I do want to say, so if you've been listening to WEI afternoons this week, a lot of these U.S. games have been 3 o'clock starts, so they've been happening during WEI afternoons. When there is a U.S. goal, and I just want to preface this, this hasn't happened yet. This is a 0-0 game 2 minutes in. But when the U.S. scores, not if, you will hear this sound. Yeah, there you go. Screeching eagle. So
it's like the bat signal.
Yeah, but yeah, that'll be your cue that there's been a goal. We will react to it. Connor Hellebuck just made a pretty good save on a Canada chance. So, so gold medal
already
game off.
Some fighting going on.
Of course.
What would you, I mean, I know we watched these two teams in the Four Nations last year a couple of times, and we talked about them being better now. I mean, when you look at this just one-off game today, is there a particular matchup or something that you're really watching that says, hey, if the U.S. does XYZ, they'll win. If Canada does XYZ, they'll win. Because I know these teams, I agree with you, they're so even. I feel like it's going to come down to one or two little things.
Yeah, there's a couple things I'm looking at. So we mentioned the goaltending. We mentioned that top Canadian line. I think U.S. has to find a way to slow them down. You're not going to shut them down. In a way, I'm almost like kind of just spot them a goal. Like, whether it's 5-on-5 or the power play, just you're not keeping all three of those guys off the score sheet. I would be shocked if they do. That's a great sign if they do, but got to find a way to slow them down a little. So last year in Four Nations, it was a lot of the Jacob Slavin, Brock Faber pair that went up against them. I think you're also going to see a lot of Quinn Hughes, Charlie McAvoy against that line. So just slow them down on the score sheet, but also literally slow them down. Like, don't let Connor McDavid get ahead of steam. In that first Four Nations game last year, he scores against the U.S. just getting a straight line of top speed, blows through the U.S. defense, takes a pass in the neutral zone. Like, can't do that. Can't give him that open ice to get going. So that's one. Another, no dumb penalties. Like, both of these teams have those agitators. I mentioned Marchand, Bennett, Wilson together. On the U.S. side, obviously, you have the Tkachuk brothers playing on a line together with Jack Eichel. All those guys are going to be trying to get under each other's skin and bait someone into doing something stupid. Don't be the side that does the something stupid. You know, like, don't let those guys get under your skin. Don't react. Don't take a retaliation penalty. If you can get them to do that, great. Marchand at this point in his career, probably a little too smart for that. But, like, Sam Bennett did have a bad penalty against Finland. Just shoved a guy into the goalie for really no reason. He might do that. You know, Tom Wilson might do something. So, fine. Let them do it. Matthew Tkachuk, Brady Tkachuk, don't get drawn in. So, that, because this Canada power play is just absolutely lethal.
Yeah, and even with the U.S. penalty kill being as good as it's been, You don't want to put those guys on the, like, you know, like a power play unit with that level of talent. You don't want to put those guys on the ice. And I feel like, Scott, a lot of these games, these championship level games, really in any sport, obviously the stars matter. But a lot of times there's kind of one or two depth pieces that people aren't expecting that really have some sort of, whether it's they score a goal or they have some sort of major impact. I mean, is it a guy like JT Miller? You talked about him being on this team, maybe unexpectedly, you know, for some folks. Is it someone else? Like, is there a guy that you look at that maybe is a depth piece or a guy we're not thinking of at the forefront of our minds that could have a big impact today?
Brock Nelson would be a guy I look at on that U.S. fourth line who seems to kind of have a knack for stepping up. Got off to a really good start in this tournament with a couple goals early. Has been a little quieter offensively. I think he's still playing well, but also someone with Olympic history in his bloodlines. His uncle, I believe, was Dave Christian on the 1980 Miracle Team, and his grandfather was on the 1960 U.S. gold medal team. So every U.S. gold medal team has had someone from the Christian Nelson family. So Brock Nelson looking to keep that going. I think just like story-wise, maybe there's something there where like that's a guy that it's going to hit home a little bit more for, even beyond everyone else. So I look at him. Jack Hughes, you don't think of as a depth player, but he's playing on the third line on this team, and he's been awesome in this tournament. And he struggled at Four Nations last year. Just didn't make an impact, couldn't seem to get going. He's been really good so far, creating offense, making things happen. Got to do it against Canada, though, right? Like, that's a different beast than anyone the U.S. has faced. So I'm looking at Jack Hughes as a guy, and then not a depth piece, but just someone to single out, Austin Matthews. Like, let's go. Let's have, you know, let's be Captain America. Like, let's be a star. I think Matthews was... He struggled a little bit at Four Nations. He had that game on his stick twice in overtime in the final. Couldn't bury it. I thought started this tournament pretty well. He was really good in the group stage. Has gone a little quiet the last two games again. Can't have quiet Austin Matthews. He's got to be an impact player.
Yeah, I think he's got to be your best player or one of your best players in this game today because that's what he should be, right? Like that's, you talked about the way they built this team and the depth pieces they brought. Well, they also brought guys like Austin Matthews because they need stars in big moments like this. It just feels like Canada's been a little bit more aggressive so far, but
yeah,
Hellebuck's been standing up well.
Shots 3-0 Canada early on. We do have to catch our first break, but USA Canada underway again. We'll be following this along all throughout the morning. We'll get your updates. We'll be reacting. We are going to throw in some Patriots, Celtics, maybe even some Red Sox. This will not be exclusively a Sunday skate hockey show. But obviously, we are well aware that there is a huge game happening. Tom Crisafulli is behind the glass, and he has your trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The United States hockey team is taking on Canada for the gold medal in the 2026 Olympics. Scores currently 0-0, 14:30 left to play in the first period. The Celtics are in action tonight from LA to take on the Lakers. Boston is looking for their fourth straight road win. Tip-off of that one is at 6:30. The Red Sox won their first spring training game yesterday by a final score of 7-2. They'll play their second one today against Toronto. You can listen to that game right here on WEEI 93.7, the Shaw's and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, proud to be local since 1860. First pitch of that one is at 1 o'clock. In some sad NFL news yesterday, it was announced that Vikings wide receiver Rondale Moore has passed away. Moore was only 25 years old, and because I can see Scott, we have our first goal of the game. Scott, John, what do we have?
Matt Boldy on a breakaway.
We got a goal.
Massachusetts native, Millis Mass, Boston College product. Matt Boldy, 1-0 USA.
All right, and that'll be trending for the first hour. I'm Tom Crisafulli, and that's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
There we go, little James Brown. Welcome back. I'm Scott McLaughlin, in with John Lyons with you Sunday morning. Just as we're going to break during Tom Crisafulli's trending, Matt Boldy made it 1-0 USA over Canada in the men's hockey Olympic gold medal game. I think in real time I said, you know, breakaway, and it did turn into a breakaway, but that's because there was a great play by Boldy chipping through the Canada defense right past Drew Doughty.
Play of the tournament so far.
Yeah, I mean, legitimately, probably. Yeah, that was a great goal. Great individual effort.
Given the stakes and given just, I mean, what a self pass, like the chip between, and not just between two defenders, but obviously between two Canadian defenders, then the finish to get by Binnington and score. To me, player of the tournament so far. And I think this is important, too, because we didn't get a chance to hit on this in the previous segment. If you missed any of it, the Odyssey app is free, of course. I think it is important for the USA to get a lead here early because they've had so many disappointments against Canada and close losses. Again, overtime last year, Four Nations final, overtime 2010. To go out and get that first goal and to get a lead, I think, look, these are NHL guys, I get it, but I think in this situation gives them a little bit more confidence, a little bit more belief that not only can they play with these guys, but they can beat these guys.
Yeah, and this Canada team has been prone to some slow starts. They've fallen behind against both the Czechs and the Finns in the knockout round, and they were able to come back against them, but make them come back against you. You're a better team than the Czechs.
I'll take your defenseman over the Czechs and the Finns.
Absolutely.
I'll take your goaltending over those two teams, too.
And obviously, we're way too early for this, but I will say, if the U.S. has a lead later in this game, do not sit back. I thought the U.S. sat back a little too much against Sweden, eventually gave up the tying goal, let that game get to overtime. Finland definitely made that mistake against Canada. They kind of, for like the last 10, 15 minutes, went into hang on for dear life mode, and it was like, that's too long to be playing like that against Canada with all that talent. So, so 1-0 U.S. right now, just about halfway through the first period. We will keep you updated. John, I didn't want to mix in a little Patriots, though, because we're into off-season mode now, and that means we're into who are the Patriots adding, and what are they going to do this off-season? And obviously the big names everyone's thrown out is A.J. Brown, wide receiver, and Max Crosby, edge rusher. There are other options we can get into, but those two guys are not just for the Patriots, but their names are out there as legitimate trade candidates, it seems like. How much of a chance do you give the Patriots of landing one of those guys, and do you think they need – they're not getting both. Do they need one of them, and which one is it?
It's funny because if you ask me what are the Patriots' two biggest needs, I would tell you edge rusher and an elite pass catcher. And I say pass catcher, not receiver, because it could be a tight end. We've seen Travis Kelce, right? The Chiefs are a tight end-centric passing game. The Patriots were for years with Gronk. So you can do that too if you want. And it's interesting because I think Crosby is a little bit of a better player. He's the guy I'd prefer, but I think he's going to cost a lot more. Like, if it takes two first-round picks to get Max Crosby, I'm all set. And honestly, with A.J. Brown, if you can get him for a non-first-round pick, I would do it. I just don't know if that's going to – like, the guy – I would much rather, Scott, sign a guy like Alec Pierce than trade for A.J. Brown. Because I think with the Patriots, they're probably going to make, I think, two – higher-end free agent moves. Like last year, we saw them spend a bunch of money, whether it was Milton Williams, Spillane, Diggs, Carlton Davis. I think they're only going to make two higher-profile moves this year, and I think one of them's going to be edge, one of them's going to be a pass catcher. I think the rest of their offseason is going to be the middle of this roster and the depth. And it's something that, for lack of a better term, they kind of got away with last year, where they were very healthy all year. Like, yeah. Will Campbell and Milton Williams missed time, but both of those guys came back. Like, Robert Spillane missed time, but came back. The only guy that missed significant time and didn't come back was Antonio Gibson. And you had Trayvon Henderson and Ramondre Stevenson anyway. So I think you need to bank on, hey, we're not going to be that healthy again next year. They need to work on the depth of this roster, which I know isn't the sexy topic, but I really, again, if you can get A.J. Brown for a non-first-round pick, a second and a fourth, something, which I don't even necessarily think is real, but if you can do that, fine. I don't want to give up pick 31 for one of those guys.
Yeah, and so to that point of Crosby likely costing more, ESPN in the last few days has done like hypothetical trade exercises for both, where they'll have one writer pose as a team who makes the offer, one writer, you know, be the team with that player to either accept or decline the offer. And so that they have four for each, and they did have the Patriots as one of the teams in the A.J. Brown exercise. They were not among the four that they chose for Crosby. But like you can still get an idea of what they're kind of thinking in terms of what it would take. Because for Max Crosby, here's one of the offers from the Bears. Wide receiver DJ Moore in a 2026 first and a 2027 third round pick. Cowboys, Dallas Cowboys offer. George Pickens and a 2026 first round pick.
And that's a huge offer,
so,
by the way.
Yeah,
like Pickens
it is.
Might be. And I'm not a huge believer in Pickens, more from a locker room and work ethic standpoint. A lot of times, especially when he's on the Steelers, you just see him standing around during plays. But he's arguably the best free agent receiver available. I mean, it's him and Alec Pierce, I think, from a free agency perspective. So him and a first-round pick, that's like giving up two first-round picks in itself, especially given Pickens' age. Like, that's a huge offer. And again, as good as Crosby is, if you told me, Scott, it was just pick 31, I'd probably do that.
Oh, yeah.
But if it's multiple firsts, I'm out. And like A.J. Brown, if it's a second and a third or a second and a fourth, fine. If I'm getting into first-round picks, I think you can just – I'm just not there yet with those guys.
Yeah, and so on the A.J. Brown side, again, as I said, they did have the Patriots as one of the four teams in this exercise. So it was Seth Walder who came up with the offer. And I'll note this by saying that the conclusion to the article, spoiler here, in case you wanted to read it, but was they declined all four offers. Ultimately, I forget who they had playing the Eagles here, but said none of the four offers were good enough. But here's the Patriots offer. 2026 first-round pick, number 31 overall. 2026 third and a 2026 sixth. But the Patriots, in addition to getting Brown, also get the Eagles' second-round pick this year. So I look at that and I'm like, well, I would do that because, yes, you're giving up your first, but if you're also getting, you know, a later back half of the second round pick back, essentially that's just a big trade down. I'm like, I would do that, you know, and then throw those extra couple picks in. Like, that's fine with me. But to the point of the conclusion of this article, is that enough?
Yeah, and I think if you're the Eagles, right, A.J. Brown is still in his prime. He's been, and I know last year was up and down, and the weird thing last year is when they started throwing to him more, they started losing games. But he was a big part of a team that 2 years ago dominated their way to a Super Bowl championship, right? Like, he was a big part of that. He's, and one of the key parts of the Eagles' offense is the combination of him and Devonta Smith. Like, when they won the Super Bowl, it was they have the best offensive line in the league, and they have arguably the best receiver tandem in the league. That helped propel them to a Super Bowl championship. I think they're going to be reluctant, even though things have been frustrating this past year, I think they're going to be reluctant to get rid of him because it's very easy. If you're the Eagles, you can convince yourself, hey, we had one down year, the offensive coordinator wasn't a fit, so we fired him and we got a new OC. We're going to be fine going forward. Like, Saquon Barkley had a little bit of a down year, but he's still got a good year or two left. He'll bounce. Like, it's very easy if you're the Eagles to convince yourself. Whereas if you're the Raiders and it's Max Crosby, it's like, hey, we've got a new head coach. We're drafted number one overall. We're in a division with the Chargers and the Broncos, and the Chiefs will be better next year. Like, we're 2 or 3 years away from being good. Crosby's, what, 29? Like, to me, Crosby, even though his price is higher, I think they'll be a little bit more motivated to move him than the Eagles will A.J. Brown.
So the other part of this is, especially when we're talking about wide receivers, what's going on with Stephon Diggs?
Yeah.
Is he back? Because if it's A.J. Brown you're going after, I have a hard time imagining both of those guys. Like, even on a restructured deal, it feels like it's kind of one or the other. And I do think Brown's an upgrade over Diggs.
He's definitely an upgrade,
I would say. So, yeah, so I would be open to that. But if it's not Brown and you go to the kind of, you know, second level of guys, you mentioned Alec Pierce. I've seen Michael Pittman, another Colts wide receiver. Again, same idea. Like, the Colts might have too many receivers, can't keep them all, can't pay them all. Can you add it someone like that and keep Stephon Diggs, or is it Pierce in, Diggs out?
And it's interesting, too, because I think some of this with Diggs comes down to the legal situation. And the Patriots, and we've talked about this before, many of us, that statement they came out with when he, you know, when the court appearance happened, they think he's innocent, and they're totally like the wording of that statement. So if that ends up being true, then I think it's a moot point. If there ends up being something there, then I think they move on regardless. But if it's, let's say there's nothing there, it ends up being a moot point, I still would lean towards a year too early rather than a year too late. Like, this is a guy who's going to be 33. He had a great season, but in the AFC Championship game and Super Bowl combined, 8 catches for 54 yards in those two games. When you, and I know Denver, you had the weather in the second half, but in the first half, he was non-existent. The Super Bowl, he couldn't be found. And that, to me, the Patriots receiver group was much, much better than 2024. But I think you can't let that blind you to they still need to get better. Like, they need to get more explosive. And I know they were a great deep ball team for most of the year. I think more of that was Drake May than it was the actual receivers getting open. And they also need more size. Like, Stephon Diggs is what, 5'11", Kayshon Booty's 5'10", DeMario Douglas is 5'10". Like, they have a lot of Mac Hollins the only big guy they have. Like, A.J. Brown's a big guy. Alec Pierce is a big guy. If you're telling me, would you rather have Pierce or Diggs, I'd take Pierce because he's younger, he's more explosive, and he adds a size element that outside of Mac Hollins, you just don't. Even Kyle Williams, I think, is who's a great athlete, is what, I think 5'10", 5'11". So you just have a lot of guys that are not big. That's, you know, Kyle Williams is fast, but you just need an infusion of a little bit more talent there.
Yeah, and, you know, when we talk about moving on from Diggs and potentially just replacing him with someone like Alec Pierce, part of me is like, well, then who is Drake May's go-to guy on third and six? Because for a lot of the season, that was Stephon Diggs. But then to kind of your point about Diggs trailing off, it was like, well, didn't Drake May really need that guy in the Super Bowl? Like, didn't he need that guy who gets open, you know, in a second and a half and get the ball out quick? And it's like, well, Diggs wasn't really doing that in the Super Bowl. Like, there weren't a whole lot of replays we saw where it's like, oh, Diggs was open and May couldn't get him the ball. Like, no, Diggs wasn't getting open.
And so, even a lot of the plays May missed, they were plays to Douglas, plays to Booty, plays to Hooper. Like, to your point, like, a lot of the misses even from May in that game, a lot of them weren't to Diggs.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, part of me is like, I would love the deep threat of Alec Pierce, right? Like, Kayshon Booty was kind of their biggest deep threat this year, and I think Pierce is clearly better than Booty. So, like, that's an upgrade, and I'll take it. But I do still wonder, like, okay, then who is May's go-to guy going forward?
And that's where the name DeMario Douglas is really interesting to me, because that's a guy that, what do you have, 43 catches in 2023 with Bill O'Brien and Mac Jones. And then you figure this year with Josh McDaniels in his second year of May, he'd be in a very similar slot role. And he had a weird season to me. Like, he had that deep touchdown catch against New Orleans. He kind of emerged as this quasi-deep threat. But a lot of that underneath stuff that you were hoping for did not materialize for him. And I think it's something, to your point, not just in the Super Bowl, I would even say in the game against Denver before that, a lot of the underneath stuff that I think you need to move the ball consistently, they didn't have. Like, Douglas had that 1 4th-and-1 touchdown catch against Houston, one of my favorite plays of the playoffs, but he had 84 total yards in the entire postseason, like in four games. So that, like, that's a guy that should be the go-to third down guy. It really didn't materialize this year. So that's why I wonder, do the Patriots also add a tight end to take some of that pressure off? Is that what their first-round pick is going to be? Do they rely on DeMario Douglas? Do they add a new slot instead of Doug? Because, that again, that's the guy, even more so than Diggs, you would want to be able to rely on third down. And, again, it just didn't fully materialize this year.
Yeah, you know, so, like, yeah, we talk about, hey, will they move on from Diggs and, you know, bring someone else in? I mean, there could be other guys that they move on from who were part of this receiving core this year, either at wide receiver or tight end, who aren't here next year because they went out and found an upgrade, whether that's in the draft, in free agency, via trade. Like, it's going to be fascinating. I think the playoffs made clear, it's like the offensive side of the ball has to be the focus. Yes, there are things you want to do on defense and another impact, or really I should say an impact pass rusher would be huge, because it was pretty much Harold Landry and Caleb on Chase on, and Landry got banged up and kind of became a non-factor down the stretch himself. So
I think your best pass rusher was Milton Williams as a defensive tackle, you know, especially down the stretch run, which, again, credit to him for being a great player, but you need more than just a defensive tackle being your best pass rusher. So that's why, again, I look at defensively, I think they're really good at a lot of spots, but they are missing that element to it. Because think about how many times, Scott, especially in the last 5-6 games of the year, including playoffs, did they have to blitz to get pressure? And a lot of those blitzes work. Credit to Zach Kerr and he got promoted to D.C. A lot of those blitzes worked, but you don't want to live in that where you have to blitz all the time to get pressure.
Where are you on the offensive line? Are you, hey, they need to go out and add to this? Or it was a young line, there's some guys learning stuff, like, let's kind of let this grow and see what it becomes?
So I think the biggest issue with Campbell and Wilson down the stretch was core strength and inconsistent technique, and I think both of those things can be fixed in and off. They'll get in the weight room, they'll get stronger, I think their technique will get more consistent, and I think Campbell, before his injury, was pretty good, and then, of course, tailed off afterwards. But I still want to add at least one legit veteran to that offensive line. And the reason I don't give a position is I'm flexible. So if you tell me they want to add a legit guard and they want to move Jared Wilson to center and have a veteran guard in between Campbell and Wilson, I'm all for that. If they want to give big money to Tyler Linderbaum and have him be the center next to Wilson and Campbell, then I'm fine with that. If there somehow materializes a great left tackle to get, fine. I'm open to it, but not my number one priority. But I still want to add a legit vet. I think you need to add another tackle regardless, because Morgan Moses, look, very consistent this past year. Dude's in his mid-30s. Like, does he have a year left with you? Does he have 2 years left with you? Like, I don't know. Marcus Bryan ended up being their swing tackle by the end of the preseason, but then by the end of the regular season, it was Thayer Munford and Vidarian Lowe. And I think another point to remember on the O-line is, as bad as Campbell and Wilson struggled in the Super Bowl, they never got benched. So what does that tell you about how the Patriots feel about their depth there and their backup tackles, their backup guard, whether it's Ben Brown, Vidarian Lowe? Like, as bad as those dudes played in the Super Bowl, to not bench them, to me, kind of sends a signal what they think of their depth. So I like Campbell, I like Wilson, but I definitely want to add a legit vet somewhere, preferably to me at guard.
All right, we have to catch a break here. We'll have more Patriots thoughts after. The U.S., still up 1-0, just went on the power play. Brock Nelson, one of the guys I mentioned, drew the penalty. Hopefully we'll have a U.S. power play goal to react to on the other side, but we do have to take a break. I'm Scott McLaughlin with John Lyons. You can call or text 617-779-7937. We'll be right back. Welcome back. That was A.J. Brown on with Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman talking about playing for Mike Vrabel back in Tennessee. I'm Scott McLaughlin with John Lyons. We were talking about A.J. Brown last segment as a potential target for the Patriots. And look, that Vrabel relationship can absolutely be a factor, because you figure, you know, A.J. Brown, he's one of these wide receivers that, like a lot of them, drama kind of tends to follow. Stuff pops up every year, certainly in Philly, and he's not the only guy in Philly that has drama surrounding him for one reason or another. But, you know, you need to have a good relationship there to kind of keep him in line, keep his head in the right place, keep him happy. I think Vrabel did a great job with Stephon Diggs in that respect this year, where it was pretty clear right from the get-go that Diggs was buying into what Vrabel was selling, and obviously winning helps that. You would have to do the same with A.J. Brown. Like, you'd have to make sure he's bought in. And I think you hear A.J. Brown in that clip talking about, yeah, like, as a rookie, I thought he was hard ass, and I'm writing, you know, I hate him. But as they got to know each other more, like, he came to really understand what Vrabel was doing and realized, you know, that, hey, this is really helping me become a better NFL player.
And his trade out of Tennessee was really the beginning of the end for Vrabel there, because there was real acrimony after that trade. There was the power struggle. Vrabel subsequently, after a bad season, gets fired. So you wonder, if Vrabel had his way, would he still be in Tennessee with A.J. Brown, you know, 5 years later? It just felt like that was really the beginning of the end. And that's the layer of this A.J. Brown thing, Scott, that I think is different than anyone else. Because just, I think if you put it on paper to me and you say, hey, do you want to sign Alec Pierce or trade for A.J. Brown? I'd lean towards signing Alec Pierce, because you don't have to give up any draft capital. He's younger. He's a big guy. He's a big play guy. A lot of things you can say about A.J. Brown, you can say about Pierce, right? But that relationship, the high productivity he's already had with Vrabel, that adds, I think, a little extra incentive if you're somebody that wants A.J. Brown with the Patriots.
I also think it's encouraging, at least to me, like, that Vrabel wanted to hang on to A.J. Brown so badly when he was in Tennessee, because, you know, Vrabel is very much a trenches get, like, I mean, he literally gets in the middle of like these trench drills that they do at practice. So, you know, like he has like that Belichick kind of mindset in him where it's, hey, build from the inside out. And you do need to do that. But with Belichick for so long, and listen, they won 6 Super Bowls, so it worked just fine. It almost felt like he was like turned away by the star receiver, the star offensive player, where it's like, you don't need that to win. Vrabel, I think clearly, if you use his time in Tennessee as the example, like he wanted that. He loved having A.J. Brown. So I think there's clearly room in a Mike Vrabel team for a star receiver, a star offensive weapon.
Yeah, and I don't even know if Belichick was turned away from it. I think he just failed at acquiring it towards the end, where Sony Michel, first-round pick, didn't work out. N'Keal Harry, first-round pick, didn't work out. Antonio Brown, for other reasons, didn't work out. And I think when you look at the teams Mike Vrabel won Super Bowls with, we always think of them as, hey, it was the defense and Brady made plays at the end. But every time, Scott, that the Patriots won a Super Bowl, they had some sort of A or A-plus level weapon in the passing game, whether it was Rob Gronkowski or Julian Edelman, who won Super Bowl MVP, or Deion Branch, who won a Super Bowl MVP. You can throw in Corey Dillon in the run game if you want. Even all the way back in 2001, we think of as the defense-first total team. Troy Brown had 101 catches that year, and David Patton was a really good receiver as well. So Vrabel saw that firsthand as a player that – if you're going to win, yes, you have to have a great offensive line. We just saw in the Super Bowl, Seahawks got pressure with 4 guys. They dominated. They won, right? You have to have a good offensive line, good defensive line, good quarterback, but you got to have at least 1 or 2 guys that the defense really has to game plan around. And right now, Stephon Diggs is kind of, he was that guy this year. I don't know if he's going to be that guy for too much longer going forward. I think Travion Henderson could be a guy like that. I don't know about Kyle Williams. Like, Kyle Williams has these moments, 72-yard catch and run touchdown against Tampa, great touchdown catch against the Giants, but that's what they are. They've been moments so far. I think they're still lacking that other guy that a defense looks at and says, oh, whoa, we have to stop that guy. If we don't stop that guy, we're not going to win. And I think, again, Diggs was that guy this year, but I think going forward, they're probably going to have to find that guy from outside the team.
We mentioned the offensive line last segment, and did get a couple texts from people who clearly seem to want that to be a priority. 207 says, morning, fellas. I think the Patriots should go out, spend a lot of money on an offensive line, get some guys that are going to block our franchise quarterback, and you'll see all of our receiver stats go up just because of the simple fact they have time to get open, beef the lineup, big boys in the trenches. 860, thinking the same way, says, sign Wyatt Teller, who was in Cleveland, is a free agent, I believe has already said he's not going back. Slide Jared Wilson to center. Michael Onwenu to left guard. Huge upgrade for a good value. So there's someone who's thinking interior line. So,
and I really like the idea. And my guy would be David Edwards, who's right now the left guard for the Bills. I don't think they're going to franchise tag him. I really like the idea of signing a guard, a veteran, to put in between Wilson and Campbell. Because Wilson, look, he was a second-team All-SEC center at Georgia in 2024, but it's the only year he started in college football. So he had 1 year of legit playing experience before he was drafted, and it was at center. They move him to guard. And look, he's an incredible athlete. He ran a 4.8 40-yard dash, I think, at the combine. And so you'd love to have him at guard, but he's played 2 different positions in 2 years. I think if you can have a center that athletic with a really good veteran guard next to Will Campbell, who's still only going to be in his second year, I think that, to me, that is a really good recipe for success. If you can have a really good left guard, veteran guy that you can trust, then you can move Wilson, who's really athletic, to center, and I think a good center and was in the SEC, and then you can allow Campbell a little bit more space to grow with a legit veteran next to him.
So we are also, of course, tracking the USA-Canada gold medal game in the first intermission right now. 1-0 USA. As we were going to the break, the U.S. was going on the power play. They did not capitalize. They had a couple good looks. Auston Matthews passed out of a grade A chance. I hope this doesn't come back to haunt the U.S., but this is like when I mentioned Auston Matthews as a key guy to be looking at. When he's on his game, he's one of the best goal scorers in the world.
Yep.
Just take that shot.
Yeah.
Don't get cute.
Like we talked about, right? Like they brought fourth line guys, they brought penalty kill guys on this team for the U.S. They also brought guys like Austin Matthews, who you need to have score goals.
Who you need scoring when he gets the puck alone in front of the net and not trying to pass out of it through a defenseman. Okay. We do have to take a break. That wraps up hour one. Scott McLaughlin and John Lyons. We'll be back. We'll throw some Bruins on the table, tying into Olympic hockey a little bit. Justin Turpin's going to call in 9:30. He's out in California for the Celtics road trip. We're going to make sure he's up, wake him up bright and early out there. Checking on the Celtics road trip and Terps, I'm sure, excitement over seeing LeBron James tonight going up against the Celtics. So we will be back with hour two coming up next here on WEI.